श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नंद श्री राज
Body and mind and your royal associates and paraphernalia are all well.
12, when the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, ego, five objects of sense gratification are in proper order, the living entity within the material elements is happy. Without these seven elements, we cannot exist. Similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements: his instructor, his minister, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, his royal order, and his friends. Purport is quoted by Sri Goswami in his Bhagavatam commentary. The king is not alone, first he has a spiritual master, the spiritual supreme guide, then comes his minister, his kingdom, his fortification, his treasury, his system of law and order, and his friends or allies. If these seven are properly maintained, the king is happy. Similar to the same in Bhagavad Gita, the living entity, the soul is within the material covering of the Mahatapa, Ego, and Pancha, Tanmatra, the five objects of sense gratification. When these seven are in proper order, the living entity is in the mood of pleasure. Generally, when the associates of the king are quiet and obedient, the king can be happy. Therefore, the great sage Angira Rishi inquired about the king's personal health and the good portion of the seven associates. When we inquire from a friend whether everything is well, we are concerned not only with his personal self, but also with his family, his source of income, his assistants or servants. All of them must be well, and then a person can be happy. O King, O Lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and followers and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and followers and follow his orders, they are also happy. Therefore, the actual happiness of the king depends, described in this verse, the king should not simply give orders to his dependents because he is supreme. Sometimes he must follow their instructions. Similarly, the dependents must depend on, should depend on the king. This mutual dependence will make everyone happy. O king, are your wives, citizens, secretaries, and servants, and merchants who sell spices and oil under your control? Are you also in full control of ministers, the inhabitants of your palace, your provincial governors, your sons, or your other dependents? Purport, the master, king, and subordinates should be interdependent. Through cooperation, both of them can be happy. If the king's mind is fully controlled, all those family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. His provincial governors present taxes on time without resistance, and what to speak of the lesser servants. Purport, Angira Rishi asked the king whether his mind was also under control. This is most essential for happiness. O King Chichiketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased. You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself, or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety. Sukadev Goswami said, O King Parikshit, all the great sage Angira knew everything he inquired from the king in this way. Thus, King Chichiketu, desiring his son, bent low in great humility, and spoke to the great sage as follows. Purport, since the face is the index of the mind, you stand in person and study the condition of one's mind by seeing his face. One Angira Rishi remarked about the king's discolored face. King Chichiketu explained the cause of his anxiety as follows. King Chichiketu said, O great lord, Angira, because of austerity, knowledge, and transcendental samadhi, you are free from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding the embodied conditioned souls like us. Oh, great soul, you are aware of everything, and you are asking me why I feel so. I'm full of anxiety. Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulences, or possessions, which are desirable even for the good demigods, because I have no son. Therefore, O great sage, please save me and my forefathers, who are descending to the darkness of hell because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from hellish conditions. Therefore, according to Vedic civilization, one gets married simply to have a son who is needed to offer oblations to his forefathers. King Chitraketu responsibly desired to get a child so he and his forefathers might be delivered to the darkest regions. He was concerned with how to get Pinda oblations in the next life, not only for himself, but also for his forefathers. Therefore, he requested Angira Rishi to favor by doing something to help get a son. In response to the request, a Maharaja Chitraketu, Angirvishu, was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful towards him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed the sacrifice by offering oblations of sweetmeats to Pasha. O Maharaj, Purish Maharaj, best of the Bharata, the remnants of the food offered to the Yogi were given to the by the great sage Angira, to the first and most perfect among Chitraketu's millions of queens, whose name was Kritajuti. So this is a whole series of verses just explaining this story of how Angira came and Chitraketu asked the sage to get a child, which was rather foolish in one sense. On the other hand, of course, Angira was very merciful, and so he actually arranged for him to have a child. But we see here the great commotion caused by Chitraketu's lack of a son. Because of that, everything else was useless. So he had a million wives, and he had a kingdom, and he had ministers, and he had wealth, and he had everything. But he was morose because he didn't have a son. And as explained here, he needed the son because the son has the business with the father, so the father doesn't get out of existence. So this is a rather selfish reason. Of course, this is common in India, this tradition of having sons that depend their rights, etc. But it's actually selfish if you look at it, because the father is looking for a way of getting out of Pavash punishment because of a sinful act. And he's putting, in other words, he's putting his sins on the son. So I'll get free of my sins if I have a son. So it is not actually spiritual. It is just a way of getting rid of one's suffering, you know, to have a son. The positive part of this injunction, of course, is that if one has a good son and raises the son properly to follow Dharma principles, hopefully we also take up the process of bhakti. But it's rather indirect. So if the son simply does the pindar rites and he doesn't become a devotee again, what is the use of that? So this is a lower type of principle where one is encouraged to partake of Dharma and continue the process of Dharma itself by having sons who will also do Dharma, including the pindar rites. So it's a way of perpetuating the system of Dharma within the society. In that sense, okay, it's good. From the spiritual point of view, of course, it is inferior. And therefore, such things are also condemned in the Bhagavatam as cheating Dharma. So at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, it is said that this work, it completely rejects Pojita, completely pushes away Kaitava Dharma, or cheating Dharma. So the only good Dharma is Bhagavad Dharma. That means bhakti. All the other Dharmas are considered cheating Dharmas. So, of course, in the Bhagavad, we do have Dharma discussed in the seventh canto, for instance, Prahlad. There's a whole exposition on Dharma, and Krishna himself does an exposition on Dharma to Uddhava in the 11th canto. And of course, Gana also was discussed in detail. And even we have a mixture of bhakti with Gana and with karma discussed in the 11th canto and other places. However, ultimately, all of these processes are condemned completely if they're not connected with the Supreme Court. If they are, they're somewhat acceptable. But even if they are connected with the Lord, it's an indirect process. It's not direct bhakti. So karma yoga becomes better by offering the results to the Supreme Lord. But still, it is not considered the best type of bhakti. Jiva Goswami calls this avrog siddha bhakti. Doing karma yoga and offering the results to the Lord. It's not directly bhakti, but somehow we change it a little bit. So we can call it bhakti. And then we have other things we can do with bhakti. That is, we're doing bhakti, along with that we do some other supporting elements, like jnana or karma, along with it, now that we're doing karma yoga with offering to the Lord.
karma yoga. But if we do bhakti and then we assist it with other elements like jnana and karma, it's kind of like a mixture, so to speak.
What?
But then it, these elements of jnana and karma are also considered as a type of bhakti, not a real bhakti, but a little bit of a transformation, because they're not unfavorable. So those elements themselves are considered sangha siddha bhakti as well. They get a little bit better position because they're with bhakti. For instance, if one does one's sangha vandana or something like that, which is part of karma, we do with bhakti, along with the bhakti, and we're thinking of Vishnu, then it's considered okay, it's sangha siddha. So if these elements, the other elements, are directed towards the Lord when we're doing the bhakti, fine, that's no problem for that, and we still say it's pure bhakti because they're not obstructive. If those same elements do have other motives in them, then it becomes a problem, and it's called mixed bhakti. They may have other desires. Then we can do bhakti without these elements at all. Just do bhakti, hearing, chant, remembering, don't care about varnashram, don't care about anything. Yeah, no, anything, just do bhakti, finish. Chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavatam. That's called pure bhakti. No other elements. But even then we can have mixture, because if our desires are for something else, then we can have some sort of mixture there. We can have tamagun bhakti, for instance, or rajagun bhakti, where we have desires. We have sattvagun bhakti, where we have a desire for a relation. We have rajagun bhakti, where we have a desire for karma, material results also, or tamagun bhakti, even worse, with violence. So, this again, even if we're doing bhakti without any mixture, but we do them with bad motives, still it is not good. So then the best bhakti is bhakti itself, with no other motives and no other gunas attached to it. No liberation desire, no material enjoyment desire, etc. Or, as an alternative, bhakti with a little bit of the other elements, but those elements all dedicated to the Supreme Lord. And it's still considered pure. So that is why in the Nectar Devotion we have the definition, jnana karma jnana amritam. Doesn't mean we can't do karma and jnana, but we don't cover bhakti, they don't obstruct bhakti anyway. And then it's still considered anyavalashya bhakti, still considered pure bhakti. So we have that option. Or we don't have to do also, and just do bhakti itself without the karma or the jnana at all, and without any other desire. So in this way, the process of bhakti is considered to be superior to everything else. And these other things like this karma here that Chitraketu is doing are considered very detrimental and actually inferior. They don't come to the right point, the very indirect methods of approaching the Lord in themselves. So this story is told to show the futility of material desires, etc. And even with good intentions of following Dharma, still one is stuck within material intentions and material desires, etc. So Chitraketu was a king, he was following Dharma, etc. And wasn't a bad king. But his consciousness is one of material world. How to be happy in the material world. And therefore his longing was for a son. How can I get a good son? Whatever like that. And therefore, when Angira approached, he did not ask for anything spiritual. And oh, give me a son. That reflected his complete absorption and material attachment, in spite of the fact he was an elevated king. So, very disappointing to see that a person should have knowledge as a king and was following Dharma, would end up simply asking a great sage for getting a son so he could be happy in the material world. So this is not actually proper conduct on the part of a great person. Good enough, even to respect the sage, that was okay. But one who didn't respect him because he asked for the wrong things. So when a sage approaches and one asks for material benedictions instead of spiritual knowledge, then one is wasting one's time and one is wasting the time of that saintly person also. So this is a very foolish act on the part of King Shukriketu. So he really didn't, he lost his intelligence, so to speak, and he was asking the wrong questions. So it is said, of course, that one should approach a tattvavid, a person with knowledge, and then one asks questions, prayaprashnina. One approaches them with questions, thorough questions. But the questions are not, how can I get a son? That's not the question I'm supposed to ask. But this is exactly what Shukriketu does here. How can I get a good son? Right? How can I get out of my misery and have a son? Of course, we find that Rupa and Sanata approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they also put teeth in their straw in their teeth and they approach humbling on the ground. And says, yes, how I can be delivered from this material world? So their question was better because they're asking how to get out of this material world and end material birth and death, etc. So, in other words, they were on a higher level. And of course, even more than getting out of the material world is how we can please Krishna. That is a better question. How can we approach the Supreme Lord and please Him? How can we please Krishna? So that is the best question of all. So at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva says that sage is maybe Sukha. Anyway, the question is asked, what is the best thing to do? And the answer, the best thing to do is asking questions about Krishna. Even the answer, we don't have to answer. Asking questions about Krishna, that's good. That's the best thing. So if we ask questions about the Supreme Lord, good, and if we ask questions about Krishna, the topmost form of the Supreme Lord, that's the best thing of all. But instead, we find here Shukriketu is asking the opposite. He's asking, oh, how can I have a son? So it's completely disappointing, in a sense, for a great sage to have to deal with a question like this. Nevertheless, Angira was very merciful, in one sense. Not that he actually arranged for his son, but actually through that he got some good lesson. So it was part of his education, so to speak. So this type of method of teaching is a little bit indirect, but we see ultimately the result was good because Chitrikita got some realization through this whole thing of getting his son, etc., and having the son die. So there was some education involved here also. Angira's approach. So, the Bhagavatam, on the other hand, is a little more direct, and directly wants to get rid of all these other processes and whatever, and simply directly tell people to engage in the process of bhakti, and not, you know, go indirectly by any other method or whatever. So, that is the direct process. So, that is the preferred process in Bhagavatam. Simply take to the process of bhakti, simply chant the name of the Lord. And that is the main point we follow. Other things may or may not do, but nevertheless, we can be successful. Yeah, but one has to have some instruction, because otherwise, if one has wrong information, concocted information, then one will practice wrong. So one needs instruction. May not diksha, but at least instruction. Usually some other person will do it. Some other relative, like an uncle or a head of a village or whatever. They're the preferred persons. There's a whole series of persons who can do the strata rites and whatever.
What about the devotees? Is it a must for the devotees' family? The devotees' family is it a must
for? It's not really important because if one chants the name or remembers the Lord, then it surpasses heaven and hell. It's not important anymore. same thing as Varnashram also, in the sense that Varnas take care of your material needs. In other words, that's your job. That's covered within the Varna. You have certain jobs you do, and according to that you have obligations and duties and conduct and everything within that. So in the modern world, of course, that's a little bit disturbed or whatever, and everybody's educated and then they take a job in a different way, and then they go through their duties or whatever, which may incorporate some rules of conduct in terms of Varnashram or may not, but at least the laws of the country have some rules of conduct which are similar to Varnashram rules. Don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat. So those basic rules, morality rules are there in any society anyway. So that conduct is there. The regulations to some degree, of course, for regulated principles or whatever are there also. So that's also okay. So the only problem is to what extent they are trying to live in the material world, that's all, and how much they want to renounce. In other words, the more endeavor they make to live in the material world, etc., then the more detached they can become, and then the less they can advance. So they have to see how much they are willing to give up in terms of material enjoyment. And it will depend on person, different people with different amounts of desire. So it's not so much the job as so much how much one is going to give up material enjoyment. Karma. It's all karma. Well, they have the sun because they have to do the pitcher rites and all this other rites. It's just a sentiment in one sense, but it's encouraged within the smritis. And this helps carry on the tradition. So you have a son, and the son learns from the father, and then he carries on the tradition. So the family traditions get carried on. And if they don't have a son, then what happens? Only daughters, and that family disappears, and the daughter goes to another family. That tradition, family, other tradition goes on, but this family is stopped or whatever like that. So they want to keep the family traditions intact by having sons. Persons can be full-time devotee and have all sorts of desires also. Persons can be outside and have all sorts of desires, and a person outside can have no less desires also. It depends on the circumstances.
But in terms of opportunity, which is available?
Well, opportunity, definitely, because they can spend more time doing bhakti activities. That's the advantage. He's the first famous commentator on the Bhagavata. Jiva Goswami actually uses his comments a lot in his works, Sattva-garbhas. He just quotes mainly him. Of course, Vishwanath wasn't around at that time, so of course Vishwanath, because that he came several hundred years later. So he quotes Sridhar a lot, when a degree is agreeable to bhakti. So he's the first commentator, and a lot of his things do are concerned with bhakti. Of course, Bhagavata was about bhakti anyway, so his things are right. Some places, however, he does more or less emphasize the Gyan aspect, whereas Jiva and even more Vishwanath will emphasize it in terms of bhakti, even though it looks like Gyan, then he'll give another meaning to it in terms of bhakti. But Sridhar just takes it as Brahman. When it says Brahman, it's only Brahman. And then Vishwanath will say, no, it means Krishna. So he gives, you know, some interpretations. No, he's much before. 200 years or so.
And he comes from the same sampradaya?
No, it's not really known what sampradaya is in.
महाराज श्री श्रीमद भागवतम की
जय। श्रीमद भागवत महाराज की जय।
जय।
श्रीमद श्री श्रीमद भागवत की
जय।
जय। ओम नमो भगवते।